Case for argument is McAfee versus Thermer. Mr. Rebholz.
To please the court, my name is Jim Rebholz, and I represent the petitioner Antonio McAfee in this case, and have represented him since 1997. And in all these years, in attempting to redress what we believe was error in the trial court, we've attempted to try to understand how and why the Wisconsin post-conviction and appellate courts did the evaluation of facts that they did. And it seems to us as though inevitably the court was attempting to fit the square peg of McAfee's trial and post-conviction findings into the round hole of Strickland's performance prong analysis. And as a result, the decision rendered by the Wisconsin courts was unreasonable application of Strickland to the case and an unreasonable determination of its facts. The court's failure to even address, Wisconsin court's failure to even address prejudice whatsoever further constitutes an unreasonable application of Strickland. The unreasonableness of the application and determination of facts is demonstrated in five.
So is it your view that she should have argued both the reckless homicide and the frame-up?
Yes, sir, absolutely, because...
Well, they're inconsistent, though.
No, they're not, Your Honor. They fit hand in glove.
Really? How is they're that possible?
I'm sorry?
Really?
Absolutely.
But in one case, the officer was killed by the other officer, and in the other, under the other ground, he's killed by McAfee. I don't understand how you can argue both of them to a jury.
Sure. Well, the predicate for the case involves McAfee fleeing the police officers in an alley and running through a neighborhood, crisscrossing through yards. It's 9 o'clock in the evening. It's a dense area. Shots are fired. The police officers who are chasing him are going in different directions, and they actually, it's kind of a pincher accent.
I don't know how you're answering my question.
Okay. McAfee is guilty of a homicide. Counsel knew before trial that there was evidence beyond a reasonable doubt that he was guilty of a homicide. He should have selected reckless homicide. He instead sought acquittal.
But how can she argue both that he killed the officer and that the officer was killed by the other officer?
He should have argued McAfee recklessly killed Tanner, caused his death, not factually and forensically killed him, but legally caused his death, whereas Ketterhagen, the other officer, who could very well have fired the fatal shot, and despite all of our years of testing, we weren't able to determine who did fire the fatal shot, it's consistent that the police officer's partner actually killed him, but that McAfee recklessly caused his death under Wisconsin homicide.
Wait, I've lost that. How can you be guilty of reckless homicide if someone else killed your victim?
Because under Wisconsin homicide law, McAfee initiated the conduct and the behavior and the chase, which was practically certain, as the Wisconsin law states, to cause the officer's death. And McAfee's action in running away and causing the chase and causing the crossfire and firing his own weapon, despite recklessly, caused a substantial factor in causing the police officer's death when his partner may have fired the fatal shot.
Essentially, you're saying he's running away and basically blindly firing the gun over his shoulder. And unfortunately hits Tanner as he's coming through the fence.
Yes, sir.
And Ketterhagen, or whatever his name is, also was attempting to shoot at McAfee and inadvertently hit Tanner with the one that went through the heart and the bullet they didn't find. McAfee fired the bullet that got lodged in the clavicle or whatever it was.
Yes, sir.
And was also a potentially killing shot. And you're supposed to argue both of those, even though Ketterhagen says he saw him lying there and wait for him to come through the same hole in the fence where he fired seven times.
Right. Well, and that's why it's so important for counsel to have argued not only friendly fire, but the cover-up. And that's
so that Kagerhagen was lying because one of his bullets hit him, too, and therefore he said the guy just fired at him seven times when, in fact, he was firing over his shoulder and going off. Is that it?
Well, the physical evidence contradicted Brian Kagerhagen's testimony in substantial part, including the radio transmission, which was wholly inconsistent with his testimony.
Now, the defense counsel was Robin Shallow.
Yes, sir.
Very experienced lawyer.
She is in terms of cases. In terms of cases, but in terms of this case, as her testimony indicated, this was her first police officer killing case, and as she testified, and it's reasonable, she was rattled.
Well, but that that Judge Brennan, who heard the post-conviction matters here, thought that she was kind of coloring her testimony to give this guy a second shot. I mean, no pun intended in a case like this.
Well,
that's what he found.
He did, and except that the record objectively supports her contention that she was flustered, because she failed to even use the word reckless in her closing argument, despite the fact that she and her client had sought submission of the reckless homicide instruction, failed to mention the reckless homicide.
Well, was she asking for an acquittal?
She did, in fact.
Well, she couldn't have done that under your view.
Absolutely correct.
You think she should have. But he'd be right back here, right?
No,
he'd be arguing that, look, she should have just argued. No. She should have just argued that it was the police officer who killed him, and then I'd get an acquittal.
He'd be in prison serving a sentence for reckless homicide, which is what he
Why?
Told me.
Well, but it's that's the point. It's a choice. The defense lawyer has to make a choice of what defense in her mind at the time gives her the best chance of getting a favorable jury verdict for a client. And she made a strategic choice. She made a choice to pursue that because nobody knew what bullet killed the officer, and the forensics didn't show, and we had shots coming from the police and from him, so it could have been either one.
Well,
it's a dark alley.
Sure, but counsel's strategy has to be based on law, and I mean Strickland and all of its progeny talks about counsel has to make an informed decision about which strategy is to be used, and since acquittal defense was not available to her under Wisconsin law.
But you said she asked for an acquittal.
Correct, she did, and acquittal was not available under Wisconsin law.
What does
law.
Mean not but, available?
But the jury couldn't
acquit? I don't understand. You can always ask a jury to acquit.
Well, you can.
No summary judgment.
Right, but the jury's not going to do it if the state has proven beyond a reasonable doubt that a homicide has been committed, which McAfee concedes. A homicide was convicted, and he's...
What do you mean McAfee concedes? He doesn't concede that he's guilty of reckless homicide.
Yes, sir, he does, and did.
You said that his lawyer asked for an acquittal.
That's right, and McAfee didn't agree with it, and as he's testified...
What do you mean? He
and his lawyer agreed that they were going to do a friendly fire and a cover-up defense and seek a reckless homicide instruction. They presented the friendly fire and the cover-up defense. The judge granted their request for the reckless homicide instruction, which put them in the perfect position that they had wanted to present their defense to the jury that he was guilty of a homicide but reckless, not intentional. Instead of closing argument, counsel ignores and, in fact, rejects reckless homicide in our interpretation by asking for an acquittal.
Right.
Yeah. Acquittal on the most serious charge is what she asked for.
Well, except that the facts were going to require conviction of a homicide. And the jury was...
Well, nothing requires a jury to do anything.
Well,
so you can always ask the jury to acquit.
Then why didn't counsel say, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you must acquit on first-degree intentional homicide and convict on
first-degree
reckless homicide. That's is
ridiculous.
What comes with
the ask your jury to convict your client?
Yes, sir.
I mean,
absolutely.
That's a possibility, but you can just ask for an acquittal. Hope the jury doesn't take reckless homicide seriously.
Well then, why do we have closing argument? I guess that's what Yarborough talks about. You're supposed to sharpen and clarify the distinctions for the jury between first-degree intentional homicide and reckless homicide.
It's a strategy whether you ask the jury to convict on a lesser charge or whether you go for broke and try to get the jury to acquit.
Right.
A jury that thought that that the other police officer had killed the victim and was trying to, the police department was trying to cover up, they might very well acquit. They'd be angry. They'd say, yeah, we're going to acquit this guy. He's the victim of a police frame-up. And if you get a few paranoid people on a jury, sure, you can win one of those cases.
It's a Milwaukee jury, though, Judge.
Okay, well, thank
you. Paranoid jurors.
Thank you, Mr. Rebholz. Mr. O'Brien?
May it please the court. Exactly 13 years ago to the day, September 17, 1996.
Okay, that's not important. Why are you going to that?
What's important is that 13 years ago, Officer...
Well, it's
Wendell
not important
Tanner
that it's 13
hands,
years ago, right?
He died at the hands
so
of Mr.
To the
McAfee.
Point.
And to this day, Mr. McAfee is still debating whether he should have been found guilty of first-degree intentional homicide or only, and I use that word in quotes, first-degree reckless homicide. I would suggest that this is
what's
precisely
the
sort of case
what's
Congress...
What's the sentencing difference?
I'm sorry?
What's the sentencing difference?
Well, it's life or, and I'm not quite sure under the law applicable in 96, whether reckless carried, I think it's maybe 20-year sentence. But the point is that when Congress enacted the AEDPA also in 1996, I would suggest it was considering cases such as this one. Where counsel
well,
makes
that's a little
decisions.
Strange. What, consider they were thinking about this case when they deliberated on
this? Cases of this nature.
What is this nature?
The nature being clients who disagree with counsel's strategy in hindsight because counsel didn't succeed in winning an acquittal. And that's precisely what this case is all
well,
about.
Well, of course, your opponent is saying it's impossible, no rational jury could have acquitted him of recklessness.
I'm sorry?
Well, your opponent says no reasonable jury, and Judge Evans says no Milwaukee jury. Milwaukee juries are reasonable and could never have acquitted him of reckless homicide.
Well, I think it's highly unlikely, and I think, however, I think you're correct in the assessment that it's not unreasonable for a defense attorney to ask for an acquittal in hopes that the jury might say, well, we're not going to acquit, but we will find him guilty of the lesser charge. And under the facts of this case, especially if the jury bought the argument that Officer Ketterhagen both lied about the ambush theory and lied about the fact that he may have shot his partner with friendly fire, that it might be more receptive to, if not an outright acquittal, at least to a reckless homicide verdict. And that's what we're, and the important thing too is to consider counsel's argument in the context of the fact that counsel requested a theory of defense instruction. Counsel's argument mirrored the theory of defense instruction that the court, that counsel requested and the court gave. The theory of the defense instruction was that it is the defense theory that McAfee did not intend to kill Officer Tanner if you find beyond a reasonable doubt. If you find that Officer Tanner did not intend, that McAfee did not intend to kill Officer Tanner, then you must find him not guilty, period. That was the theory of the defense instruction the counsel got the court to give. The counsel also got the court to give the reckless homicide instruction. So a reasonable juror looking at this evidence and hearing those instructions, which were given before the closing argument, and then hearing counsel's closing argument, might, if convinced by the friendly fire police cover-up argument, might say, you know, we could just outright acquit because the state isn't even asking for its own lesser offenses such as attempted murder or reckless injury for the shot to the back. But we're not going to go there. We're going to agree to reckless homicide. That's a very reasonable defense strategy to take, and that's one that you can glean from what our counsel was arguing, despite her efforts to fall on her own sword at the post-conviction hearing, which Judge Brennan was not impressed with. So, again, under the AEDB standard for review, McAfee has to prove that the Wisconsin courts acted contrary to or unreasonably applied Strickland and, more specifically, Yarborough v. Gentry as it relates to the closing argument. He has not met that burden, especially in light of the presumptively facts as found by Judge Brennan in his thorough opinion and as followed by the Wisconsin Court of Appeals. So unless there are any further questions, I'll
conclude. Okay, thank you, Mr. O'Brien.
You.
Mr. Rebholz, your time expired, but you can have a minute if you'd like.
In response to the various questions about the consistency of friendly fire and the cover-up and the reckless homicide defenses and my comment that they fit hand in glove, they weren't even alternative, I would cite the court to the state's brief on page 19, wherein the state of Wisconsin effectively concedes the compatibility of friendly fire, cover-up, and the reckless homicide defense. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Rebholz, and thank you for accepting the appointment and for your vigorous efforts on behalf of the court. And the court will be in recess.